I'm good. Fremont Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati has discussed that this world is like a museum. And we can understand it if we just consider it. We know so many corridors of the museum, so many displays. But one thing that we don't know very well is the curator or the proprietor of the museum. We sometimes become fascinated how intricately things are working, but still are so foolish as to insult the curator by denying his existence. Anyway, there are many observations that we could make to better understand our situation. So I think I'll try and set forward a few of these. One thing is that we can notice the speech of motion in this existence all around us. So I'd like to consider motion apart from the even more bewildering aspect of time. Motion can be seen in any natural body, for example, a ball. A ball has the tendency, if it's not in motion, to remain at rest. And if it's contacted by another mover or an entity in motion, then that ball can begin to move. There's a law in physics that was formulated by Newton that a body at rest will remain at rest in the absence of contact with the body in motion. So from this it becomes obvious that we can understand the sequence of mover and move. Something that is at rest, in order to begin to move, it has to be touched by a mover. We can examine everything around it. For example, if we see a ball rolling down the street, we can understand that the cause of that ball coming down the street is a bat. That bat is also being moved by a boy. And this way we can understand the process of mover, moving the mover like this. Now the point is, this sequence of mover and mover, can't go on to infinity. There has to be a first mover. If there's no first mover, there can be no subsequent motion. And this is plain and false. You see there's motion. The point is, there has to be first mover. Then there can be subsequent motion. And this first mover, everybody has conceived understood as God. Now, some people have put forward the theory that motion can go on to infinity. Mover, like that. The confusion is resulting from the fact that God is infinite. We could say that motion can go on to the infinite, but it can't go on to infinity. There has to be the first mover, or the whole thing is simply not going to operate. Anyway, there are many analyses that we can put like this, and there are many examples we can give. Just like many years ago, I had a friend who was very fond of dominoes. He had a large collection of dominoes. So sometimes children stack these dominoes, say dominoes are 2 inches. You stack them 1 inch apart, you can get a long, long chain of dominoes from one room even into another. Then if you get at the end of that chain, simply push on the first domino, and that will knock the second domino, third domino, like this. You can walk into the next room and around the corner up on a chain of falling dominoes. And this is something children sort of stare at in awe how this is happening. This is life, the process of cause and effect. And people, if they have any sense of, or they have any intelligence, should have some awe when they see this process of motion going on all around them. So much inexplicable motion. Anyway, the point behind all this again is that we should analyze how all this is taking place and not simply be bewildered by it. Because we're caught up in the middle of this process and we have to have some understanding of just what our position is. This analysis of motion is similar to another sort of analysis that we can make. That is, in the way that things are ordered, or in the way that so-called natural bodies, this natural bodies is a term that's used in philosophy, meaning simply some material entity. Natural bodies, which have no intelligence, act repeatedly in the same way for achieving the same result. There are many examples here again. For example, the large body of water, the ocean, can be observed. And it will be seen that water is evaporated from the ocean. And by evaporation, the water becomes pure. It's drawn up into the clouds, and the clouds carry the water over the land. Then the clouds have a tendency to distribute this water, especially on the high places like mountains. And from there, the water flows down in rivers, and all moving, non-moving, living entities are nourished by this water. Then again, the dirty water flows into the ocean and can be purified again. So this process is going on everywhere, and it goes on in the same sequence over and over and over again. Now, the point is that supposedly something without intelligence cannot act for an intelligent end. That's all right, but that means that then these non-intelligent things have to be manipulated by an entity with intelligence. Again, this entity is known everywhere as God. This conception that most people have of God is very shallow, but there's really a tremendous subject to this. Well, not to express it very nicely, there's tremendous field of investigation. Anyway, this should be the prime interest of the living entity, which is the human form. Human beings are a kind of conscious being distinguished from so many other kinds of conscious beings. For example, we can see that a dog is conscious. He knows that he needs food. He knows that he needs to defend. So many things. Anyway, the human beings have consciousness, which is obviously very much developed. But they're in the middle of all this phenomenal museum. They can wonder how things are being ordered. And this is their duty, to wonder and to make some positive investigation. There's one particular display that struck me the other day. A few years ago, I was involved in some sport called skin diving. So probably everybody knows in skin diving there's an apparatus called scuba gear. Maybe you can picture some little so-called frogman blowing bubbles from down deep under the water. The only link that he has with the living world, at least his world, is this little bottle of air. And there's so many dangers, so many fierce aquatic animals, so many things which could finish him at any moment. Anyway, this scuba means self-contained underwater breathing apparatus. Now the analogy here is that just like this breathing apparatus can keep a little man alive deep in the ocean, similarly, the process of Krishna consciousness can keep a living entity alive deep in this ocean of ignorance. Because the whole world is sitting at the bottom of an ocean of forgetfulness and nothing. People don't have the consciousness to even wonder at what they are or what sort of situation this is. So practically, they're like dead people. They're just sort of floating around. Their lungs are filled with water, and they can never rise to the surface in that condition. So this self-contained underwater breathing apparatus, the idea certainly I was thinking of, I should pick up my these malika. So I thought, oh, let me pick up my scuba gear and swim back to the temple. The analogy is that the people with this link of Krishna consciousness, they can get the water out of their lungs and they can revive their consciousness. and they have every facility to rise into the surface of the ocean of ignorance of material existence. The material existence is called ignorance because people are in the most precarious condition and they take no note of it. For example, we can see by any kind of thoughtfulness that at any moment this body, which has been called by, again, by Bhakti Siddhanta, a fleshy, tabernacular entity, it can be mutilated at any moment by so many forces in nature, by some other living entity can have some malicious whim and put a bullet in it. So many things as far as like, this point is that this death is a phenomenon which we all are waiting. And as long as we are waiting, we should be very anxious to find out why we put here in this condition. This is the feature which is stressing in this teaching of Krishna consciousness, because we are trying to get people to be serious about this opportunity of understanding this spiritual knowledge. The spiritual knowledge is the substantial knowledge which can explain everything. Spiritual knowledge is sometimes called the science of God, especially this Krishna conscious philosophy is very complete science of the absolute truth. If we understand that the absolute truth is the source from which everything is emanating, then we can, going back to this idea of first cause, we can at least try and understand that the absolute truth is the self-sufficient source from which everything is coming. That means this material world is coming from the absolute truth. The material world is pictured as a perverted reflection. Just like by going to a riverbank, you can see a tree, which is upside down. That tree is looking in the river, you see the reflection. But that's not the real tree. The real tree is standing above that reflection. But similarly, this material world, which is limited by this condition of time, which brings with it birth, disease, old age, and death, the material world is compared to this downward tree, the roots upward and the branches down. The real tree is the spiritual manifestation or the transcendental movement. Right now we're in this nasty old phenomenon. So by understanding very clearly comparison and the description of this material nature and the spiritual nature, then our original consciousness can be revived. Krishna consciousness is very attractive because Krishna is the actual eternal nomenclature of the absolute truth. Krishna means all attractive. And the absolute, as he has emanated everything, naturally he's attracting everything at the same time. He's the source of everything, so he's full. But sometimes we say that absolute mathematics is like this. 1 + 1 = 1, 1 - 1 = 1. That means in the absolute sphere, Krishna is so full that it's inconceivable. There's no limit to his potency. So he can emanate things like billions and billions of living entities, and time and space, cause and effect, all these things. These things have to be understood by a process descending from above. In other words, it's like we can be rescued from the bottom of the ocean by some men coming down with these breathing apparatus. But we can't rise from the bottom of the ocean with our lungs filled with water. Similarly, when we've completely forgotten what we are, when we have almost no consciousness for understanding the absolute truth, then the process for understanding is to accept the help of someone who are coming down, who is bringing knowledge down to our level on the platform of absolute knowledge. So we've all been very much favored by our the divine grace, Swami Bhaktivedanta. Now, it's our duty to try and present this process of Krishna consciousness to everyone. That will be doing to the best of our ability. By now, the mantra has become very famous, but it's not always very well understood. But so many people know that Hare Krishna, I know that, but they don't actually know it. There's so much to the teaching of Krishna consciousness that it takes a very careful study. We're trying to explain the Bhagavad Gita, which is spoken by Krishna, to Arjuna. And the Bhagavad Gita is the perfect condensed form or dictionary for looking up the information on everything, on all of this material existence, for understanding exactly what it is and why it's here. So this process of chanting is one of the means recommended for it is the central means for making spiritual advancement. So we invite everybody to participate in this process by associating with us, with Krishna conscious person, by chanting, by trying to understand the philosophy, by taking prasadam, and by being a little thoughtful, a little curious, a little bit anxious about making perfection of life. We cannot accept the rather foolish and speculative theory that when this body is finished, then we'll also, the I, or the identity within the body, will be finished. Nobody is very much eager to die. In fact, people are often expressing a hankering that they could live forever. But the mistake is in thinking that they should want to live forever in this sort of existence as we are now. The main concentration of existence is this body, material body. We tend to think that this body is ourselves, but with a little investigation, we can see that the body is not ourselves. It's an extension, but it's a temporary extension. Like when we were first born, although we didn't have a very developed mind, still we can understand that I was there within a very tiny body. Gradually the body evolved and the mind evolved, but the central fact is the I has remained. And now we're hankering for some way to live eternally. But we're forced to adopt this rather reckless attitude of saying that we don't really care whether I die or not. This death is miserable. Everybody knows it. Sometimes people will come in and say, well, why didn't you prove that there's such a thing as a soul? Well, there are two alternatives at this point. Number one, if somebody says that to me, I could kill him outright. Then he would know, yes, I have a soul. Feel a little sick, here I go to this whole miserable thing again. But the practical process is for him to sit down and rationally try and understand what he is. Everything is completely explained, and by attentive listening, we can revive our consciousness enough to understand it. Anyway, this current theory, which is very popular, is that consciousness results from material combination. And with dissolution of this body, that this I will also be dissolved. But even from the beginning, this doesn't answer anything. Because the material combination has made this I, Still, at that point, when the eye is formulated, it should be obvious that it's completely different from the material body. So the eye has maybe appeared that it's formulated, but actually it's appeared from some other dimension. It's just not there before, and suddenly it's there. So somebody's claiming, I exist, I think I exist. So people are currently putting forward the theory then that I've come out of material combination. There's no explanation for how the matter has combined or why it's giving rise to my existence. There's actually no answer to any question that anybody can ask. The only reason that this sort of theory goes unchallenged is that people's brains are so dulled by the actual brainwashing process that they're subjected to their whole lives. Because the people in the material world that understood to be here, because they've made a big mistake, because they've chosen to misuse their independence, therefore, with this understanding, it should be clear that nobody should expect that you're going to be born into a society which is full of all blissful knowledge. As people are born and go to school, say in America, and they then think, oh, I understand everything. And if I'm miserable, then I have to go to a psychiatrist who will beat me on the head and tell me I'm happy when I'm miserable. And ultimately I'll be going for shock treatment or something like that and commit suicide. Anybody who is really thinking over the experiences that he's had, even though they have a dreamlike quality, they haven't got much reality just now, but still they happen. And there's sort of a tragic history. So many miserable things happen. So many miserable people that we couldn't help, didn't know what to do. They're just somewhere suffering or by now dead. We don't know what happened to them. At this point, everybody should please be serious and make some profit out of this particular meeting to understand that this is a very serious subject matter and that there's every possibility for getting some enlightenment. This should be the most coveted item. Everybody wants some knowledge. Indirectly, we can see it. Everybody wants to talk. Talk is the most enjoyable thing. They want to talk to somebody, gossip, read newspapers, go to movies. All this is, they want to witness some kind of communication because the latent ideas, they want to get some knowledge. They have a hankering for understanding what they are, but their minds are so dulled by this bad habits that have been impressed on them, that they just can't make it. So obviously the process of spiritual understanding, although anybody can take it up, it'll be a gradual process. In the beginning, there simply has to be a sincere desire to do something, to actually do something, to contact reality, to establish that reference point. First of all, to understand what I am. And just like there's the process of meditation describes where recommendation is that you think, am I this hand? So you think, yes, am I this hand? Well, if I cut my hand off, where would I be? I wouldn't be in the hand anymore. The hand is useless. That's why I'm not that hand. The hand is my hand or my extension. If we consider it like that, am I this foot? Am I this leg? Am I this? No. There's some interesting statistics, not statistics, but facts from the study of the brain. Scientists have tried to locate where is the mind. And the conclusion is that mind is not even contained in the brain. The theory was that the brain was generating some electricity and that's the mind. And the mind was identical with the soul. But there's so many cases, for example, people had a brain surgery that had huge portions of their brain removed. And their consciousness apparently wasn't impaired at all. They had full memory and they appeared normal, much as before. And there's even one sort of horrible incident where one workman got a crowbar floated right through his head. He was still living. He had the crowbar in his head. He walked to the doctor and had it removed. And a huge slice, or whatever, cylinder of this fleshy stuff was taken out of his head. And after that, it was patched up. And he still lived. Everybody thought, well, he's still the same as before. These are freaks of nature, but the point is, the soul is so potent that even in spite of so many damages inflicted on the material and machinery of the body, the soul can manage things. Oh, we know so many stories about that. There's nothing going through on this. The point is, the material science hasn't established what life is, or where it's coming from, where it's finished. Even the greatest scientist has to go to the funeral parlor and see their friends lying there. The body's lying there, but the friend's gone. And the deceased is slapping the face of the scientist. And he has to go back to his little ivy tower and ivy laboratory and try and investigate some more. This process can go on endlessly. If anybody accepts this idea, which is so popular, then I'll just go on doing whatever work I want to enjoy myself. And then automatically everything will be solved. All the problems of life will be solved for me. And I'll be relieved of all the trouble without any effort. And that's not a very good idea. So please take this Krishna conscious movement very seriously. No matter what misrepresentations are circulating, some people are very unintelligent, but they have a tendency of talking a great deal. So the point is, there's so much false propaganda going on. Everybody that's really intelligent has to be looking out for himself to understand what is actually true. So we're offering that opportunity. Everybody can come and observe us, very scientifically experiment with us, and try and get this benefit, this Krishna consciousness from us, and enjoy it. At least make a solution to so many problems. So, are there any questions? Well, the point is, Krishna is the fountainhead of everything. Everything, what you can conceive and what you can't conceive. And that relationship stands for every entity. Therefore, he's all attractive, because he has everything.
He's all attractive because he is.
Yes. Any desirable quality is perfect in him. Therefore, he's all attractive.
How man becomes attractive, first of all, you have to understand that. Suppose a very rich man is attractive. A very intelligent man is attractive. A beautiful man is attractive. A famous man is attractive. why did man get back? The renowned man, he also back. These are attractive to them. If we analyze the sun, we find all these three opulences are attractive to man, fully presenting the sun. So, this is from historical reference that there is not a single person who can be compared to Krishna. Therefore, he is all attractive and everything that we experience, that is manifestation of Krishna's energy. Parāsa-sakti dhīrāya-vasti, these energies are differently manifested. Similarly, in the Sutras also it is said, Parāsa-brahmana-sakti tathaiva-abhiram-yara. Abhiram-yara is the whole cosmic manifestation. He is a display of the multi-energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, because he is fully energetic, therefore he is attractive and cause of all causes. These are the evidences of the egoism. And when you are actually present, you are attracted to so many people. In the Bhakti-kīla, Kuru-kṣatra, when you are speaking the Bhagavad-gītā, the speech which he delivered, although he is not present now in our vision, he cannot find in the whole world such attractive speech of Buddha. Nobody can say. But we have got practical experience of this, which is still going on. It's still we are trying to understand the greatest scholars of the world, the philosophers, they're trying to understand the world. There are many, many great scholars and saintly persons all over India, but each and every one of them try to understand Bhagavad Gita. Even Professor Einstein, he was reading Bhagavad Gita. So, to that attractiveness is evidently presented by the wisdom of Bhagavad Gita. So, he is all attractive, there is no doubt about it. And in the Vedic literature, you also understand tasmin vijñāte sarvameva vijñātam bhavanti. These two can understand the Supreme Personality of God, or they are two souls. Then sarvameva vijñātam bhavanti, you can understand everything, how it will work. Because everything is display of his energy. So if you can understand how his energy is acting, then you can understand the whole cosmic energy. That is explained in the history. Just like in our present, we have a practical experience with sun. The whole material world is maintained by sunlight. The planets are rotating by the heat of sunlight. The vegetation, the water, everything is being contracted by the sunlight. By causing sunlight, the water is evaporated from the sea, it is formed into gas, clouds, and it is distributing all over the land, then vegetation is coming and it's becoming green, yellow, many colorful. So actually the sun is the cause of all material manifestation. So if anyone can study what is sun, then he can understand how originally appears. Very practical. Similarly, sun is also not the ultimate cause. The ultimate cause is Krishna. Ishvara Paramakrishna Satyananda Vigraha. Ananabhidhari Govinda Sarvakarna Tara. Sarvakarna Tara means the cause of all things. And the sun is described as the eye of God.
Life
of every planet. Without sunlight, nobody can see anything. We are very much proud of tasting everything by seeing. I want to see. Now that seeing power is resting on the sunlight. Without sunlight, your eyes are useless. Therefore, sun is the eye for all planets. All planets in all the residents of each and every planet. Just take the way to Sanita Bhagavanta Raga, Samantha Sivamuti. Therefore, he is the king of all planets. These are described in Bhagavanta. As is to say, unlimited potency or unlimited heat. There is no limit. How much heat is there in the sun? So that sun also rotating, the sun comes to the power of that. That sun is also rotating under the guidance of the sun. Moving the mind is the sun. The sun is rotating. It has got his body. It is rotating 16,000 miles per second. It's rotating. And you cannot deny it. It is a fact. So somebody has arranged how the sun is rotating. Just like those opening rotates in this place by the scientist. He is playing on electronic machines in the laboratory. And this footprint is rotating. So why don't this king, that the sun is also rotating under some guidance? How is that divine? So that is explained in Brahma-samhita. The sadhvaram samadhikam sutapāvata. It has also a lifetime duration. And so that lifetime duration is correct. So now who gave me his lifetime duration? This moment, just like Smart, both in the world, even in three, that without pushing up, without being moved by somebody else, and nothing can happen. So he loves moving, just not there, moving down to the power of that good. Go in the land, you will come to come up. That was his respect. He must know. How is that? Do you understand the word Krishna? It's not he must know. How is this happening? That is not a study of what Gita. If he is studying of what Gita, very carefully, he can understand. The Sri Jati Sarami Mangrijata Bhavanti. If he can simply understand the Krishna and Krishna philosophy, then you understand it. It is so fun. And put it now, modern days,
people are very much attracted by scientific knowledge. So there is complete scientific knowledge in Krishna consciousness. So if you want to understand, even from scientific point of view, his wife is every man. For self-denying,